they were from the same psychic and spiritual families. An interesting thing that has just come out in the news is that there's a whole town, I've forgotten where it's located, anyone seen this in the news, of 200 people or something that through hypnotic regression have all started to remember that they lived together in a community a couple hundred years ago. As something just came out in the newspaper. I think it was Lake Elsinore. There's this whole group of people living around that are all gathered together now, and they all have, individually through hypnotic regression, are coming up with these memories of having lived with each other at another time. And we are at a time of reunion. We are at a time when those who have these affinities are being brought together in soul families, and it cuts across national, racial, and religious and all kinds of other human boundaries. The Grail, the what we're bringing together in this energy of the temple, is that people who are becoming Templars is that are attracted to this is happening from all over the country, it comes through some kind of an urge that comes, and they just get a real urge to call or write or find out about this. And the people all, having talked to them myself for long periods of time on the telephone, the people that are being drawn to this assemblage are very interesting people. They're very developed. They have, each of them, a great deal to contribute in their own kinds of ways. And it makes me think of a great round table in the Arthurian cycle, the round table, where these people are all coming together in a collegial kind of fashion, and yet this is being done more on a, you know, through long distance at this point. But this group, the temple, is a group that is existing because of that kind of affinity, not religious affinity, not any other sort of thing. Now, group synthesis is one of the most powerful means of achieving individual development through group work and special kinds of group work together. But if we go now to and the most powerful of these things is a work like the Grail, the work like the Grail liturgy. The Grail liturgy is a means of bringing higher force into those who participate and through them into the world that is like adding the calories that are necessary to change water from water to steam. It's one of the great ways that higher force can be accumulated, and it cannot be done by oneself separatively or in a lone wolf fashion. It only happens in a group. But there are other things that do this. There are other group kinds of things that do this. In 1986, I worked with a group of people to start a worldwide meditation. And it's done on Greenwich Mean Noon on December 31st all over the world. The first year we did it in 1986, we had literally hundreds of millions of people sitting in an hour of silent meditation in a sense of human unity and for the peace of the nations and for the renewal of the planet. And that was all. It was very general. Nobody made speeches. Nobody led prayers. It was done in silence, and there was music beforehand. And then people sat for 1 hour in absolute silence. Many people had never meditated before. The entire nation of Sri Lanka participated. Most of the major ashrams of India, 24 nations declared it a special day of this. And we had groups in Moscow, in Australia, all over. We had it at the King Dome in Seattle. There were 7,000 people. There were 4,000 people in Denver, Colorado. In Santa Cruz, we gathered 2,500 people, 500 of them standing out in the morning mist and rain because we couldn't get them into the Civic Auditorium. And everybody sat together. And it was right after 1986 that major changes started happening in the consciousness of the world. It was the first time in the history of the planet that all around, circling the whole planet and all of humanity, there was a great liturgy of unity that was done. And that's what it was, a liturgy of unity. And that event. It was an event in human consciousness that finally made a loop around the entire planet and finally made humanity one on a certain level. And hundreds of millions of people participated. Since then, it's been celebrated every year. But our gatherings, the second year we only gathered about 1,800 people, and the third year about 1,200 people, and the fourth year about 900 people, and this is, I think, the fifth year. Last year, was that last year the fifth year? Anyway, last year we encouraged many gatherings. We just know from the perspective of Santa Cruz County, but within a couple of years, there were several other groups that were holding these things, and so the people who would attend them, who would get up at 3 a.m. No matter the weather, and go someplace with a bunch of other people and sit in silence for an hour and then go home. There aren't too many people like that around. And the people who did it got to be fewer and fewer. And last year, I think in the sort of official gathering that we had, which was done by the December 31st committee, I think we had about, 100 people maybe? Something like that. And this year, we're expecting about 30 or 35, and I actually won't be there. Marie will be handling one in Santa Cruz, and I'll be working one up in Oregon. But the importance of this date and this time is not how many people come together, because the ectoplasm was spread out, so to speak, the spiritual and the etheric ectoplasm was spread out and established, and that whole matrix was established in the invisible at that time. What's important now is that people with higher understanding and higher development and priestly capabilities are able to use this sacred time in this sacred place, which has been established rhythmically for many years now, in order to raise up the vibration of the planet and humanity through their meditation. Now, it is a truth that I think it was about 6 or 7 years ago or 8 years ago that people who led transcendental meditation decided they were going to have a great, huge meditation event in one of the Midwestern towns of the United States. And they were then going to make measurements after that to see if crime rates had diminished and different kinds of things. And they had their big event. And during the having of their event, they ended up clashing with the townspeople and all kinds of problems. And afterwards, they published rather questionable results that showed very little, if any, effect on the planet and the world. Before the event occurred, I pointed out to a group that I was teaching at that time that you could have 100,000 people of very normal consciousness sitting together or working with something like transcendental meditation, which is not a deep form of spiritual meditation, and they can have less effect than one highly developed saint or being sitting down and working for the same ends. Because it's simply out of their reach. It's not part of their empowerment. And if you had two such saintly beings, or three or four, then you have incredible results. And we have that. That is part of the planetary guidance. But if we have such beings actually in flesh, in bodies sitting together, a group like that can have tremendous effect and can do tremendous things. Those kinds of groups do exist and have existed at different places in the world. Very developed groups, small numbers of people. It doesn't matter how many people you have, it matters what the quality is. But on December 31st, we didn't have an assemblage of great masters. We had just common people. And what they left was a whole matrix of the human aspiration for peace and for the renewal and the salvation of the planet and of humanity. And that is a canvas upon which higher developed beings can bring into form and into manifestation wonderful things for the planet. And that time that comes about each year in a rhythmic time, when there's still probably 300,000 people meditating all over the world at that time, but the ones that are doing it are much more committed and of a much higher development than the huge group that started it. And this is a time that's a very sacred time. It's like a new age festival. It's like a a new sacred time that's been established in the planet. And this is a time that it is very important to work with and become part of and participate in that group energy. It's a great liturgy. And I brought this to remind you about this. It's not on the evening of New Year's. It's not New Year's Eve. It's the wee hours of the morning before that evening. December 31st is on a Tuesday this year. And at 4 a.m. in the morning, December 31st, from 4 to 5 a.m. is this very special time, the time of the meditation. Late, and then the day goes on, and that evening come along the New Year's Eve celebrations and things like that. It's not done on New Year's Eve or after New Year's Eve, it's before that. And that is a time that I especially recommend as a very special and sacred time for that, through one's meditation, that one can participate in a very sacred event. And that event is utilized by the elders and guides of humanity as a very powerful time. Now, full moons are other powerful group gatherings and group meditation times. Full moon is the time when the planet Earth is exactly between the moon and the sun, and there is an axis that goes between them, just like a spine. And when that configuration occurs, there is a deep, deep meditation that the elders of humanity and the planetary guides and masters do with, so to speak, and I'll use these terms, the solar guides and masters and the galactic guides and masters, the higher and higher and higher beings, so to speak, the higher and higher consciousnesses that are their guides and their teachers that they themselves can only reach through telepathic means. All these come into alignment at this time. At this time, in this planet, on the planet Earth, when that alignment occurs, there is a special deep group meditation that all hierarchy participates in. And if we ourselves align with that and attune with that meditation, there's a great deal of progress we can make and a great deal that we can bring into the world. But the force of that meditation is so powerful, it brings a force into the planet that will show its effect either positively or negatively, depending upon how it's received, just as a garden can have fertilizer put on it, and if it isn't put on in the proper way and watered in the proper way, it can burn everything. Or if the fertilizer is put on it and is watered and prepared in the proper way, it can fructify everything. And it's the same with us. If we, at the time, of the exact time of the full moon, when that exact axis is present, when the deepest part of the great higher group meditation of the planetary beings is occurring, if at that time we're watching a horror movie, that all that energy which we're qualifying at that time and all the use of our chakras that we're making at that time and all that we are being and the ego state that we're in at that time will be greatly magnified in us. And for at least the next moon cycle, it will be a magnet that will pull us back and back to that all the time. And it is at the time of the exact full moon that terrible crimes are committed, gross crimes. The police reports will tell you that full moon nights are the worst nights for police action and all kinds of weird things and violent crimes and weird crimes and things like that. At the time of the full moon, there's a tremendous amount of energy, power, a tremendous amount of power that gets easily perverted and turned wrong directions. So it's a time when that the energy can very much separate Earth from heaven, but it also can very much bind Earth to heaven. And that can be done if one knows about this energy and about the full moon meditation, and one attunes oneself with it and goes through and makes it a special time, a sacred event. The preparation for full moon meditation in earlier European master traditions was 3 days before and 3 days after and the day of. And 3 days before and 3 days after and the day of, there was no alcohol consumed, there was no sexual activity, there was no sexual intercourse, and there was a focus up on the event coming, the time of the full moon coming. And the first day was was focused on a kind of an aspiration, a kind of looking forward to it, and thinking about it, and reading about spiritual things, and keeping one's consciousness at that place. And the second day was spent this way, and the third day in certain kinds of themes. And at the exact on the day of the full moon, people dressed in white, and they didn't speak, they didn't talk very much, and they got completely unattached from all kinds of things that would bind them to earth. And then they went through this meditation. And then the 3 days after were a period of digestion for 1 day, assimilation for 1 day, and on the third day, one could begin to start to see what one had received, because the connection is so high that it doesn't even begin to form itself into thoughts and shapes and ideas until about 3 days after the contact. And so on the third day, very often, people would start to have significant dreams, and it would start to create itself, filter down through the threads of antikaranic continuity until it finally came into human consciousness. And that was the practice. Well, I usually follow that practice only at the time of the great full moons, Easter and Wesak, and the Moon of Christ and Humanity myself, but I always keep the full moons because they're very important times and powerful times. And if you don't keep them, you can lose ground. You can keep yourself away from it, because if a great presence happens in the ocean of reality and you ignore it, you push yourself away from it. So the full moons are very important times. This is a very important time. The Easter moon, the Easter Passover moon, Easter is a very important time. Christmas Day, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day are a very important group time. That's a time when people all over the planet are focusing in their souls on the higher nature of humanity and the higher things. And that is a time that can be used very much by hierarchy and by meditating beings as a sacred temple, as a time that can focus things for humanity by simply raising oneself up behind the meditation. So the times, the sacred times that we have coming up, I mentioned, are the time of the full moon, the time of Christmas, and the time of December 31st, the Global Peace Meditation. These are sacred dates all coming up during times that we won't be gathering ourselves as a group. And there are times that you should be aware of yourself as part of a great invisible group, as a communio sanctorum, a community of saints, invisible and visible, that use these times and the energy of these times for the benefit of humanity and the planet. Now, there are practices, however, that one can do not in group formation, that build the antikarana, that build the continuity of consciousness, and help one to become more expanded and aware, and to be able to become conscious on multi levels of being. I'm going to divide these into practices that are prophylactic, practices that are breathing practices, and breathing and visualization practices. Practices with vital energy that are very often connected with the breathing practices and so on. And practices of joy. Now, these four kinds of practices are, I can describe them in more detail in the following ways. They are not things that require great amounts of time or that one plans for particularly, usually, but rather they are opportunities that one uses when they come up, and they exist for certain things. But some of them are things that are planned for or things that are used. Now, the prophylactic practices, basically, these are practices that allow one to form and keep the formations one creates in higher consciousness through protecting oneself from the forces that tend to destroy them. I've mentioned, for example, the drinking of pomegranate juice, because there is a connection between the psychic and the etheric and the astral and mental senses and radiant energy and electromagnetic energy, magnetic energy. One is surrounded in a sea of destructive forces. There are AM and FM radio waves and microwaves and other kinds of things constantly cutting through you. And they, by their very nature, are infernal. There is much about the technological age and the industrial age that is demonic. And it is dehumanizing and anti-humanistic. It's the ignorant use of the products of science that are actually used by dark forces to hold humanity back. And most humanity does not understand what some of these forces are. The reason that the ancients once went up into mountaintops and ways places were very high above the valleys in order to do their work, and the reason why Jesus took his disciples at nighttime on the top of a mountain was to get away from the human vibration. That's before there were electronics. Just the human vibration of human thought, which is also radiant energy. It goes out in all directions. And it is constantly coming at us like arrows. We aren't sensitive to it, we aren't aware of it, but it is there, nevertheless. And if one wants to get free enough to become sensitive to higher vibration and higher things, one has to go up physically to get above that, because it sinks down low like carbon dioxide. It sort of just hangs down around the valleys and the cities of humanity. And at nighttime, when most people are asleep, is when it is the least active and the least potent. And it is when one can go up on a mountain and one can make very high contacts. And in a vigil, one is able to do that. One always goes up high and one does the vigil at nighttime. And that's when one has the purest contact on the spiritual levels. But now we live not only in the cities and in the valleys with people, because cities are not built on top of mountains. They're built in valleys and river valleys and seacoasts and things like that, where the vibration level is the thickest and the heaviest, and not just the human vibration. I mean, not just that, but all the products of human civilization, so-called, are here, and they're polluting us, and they're in the air that we breathe, they're in the radiant energy that's piercing our flesh at all times and everything else. One of the things that we can do to protect ourselves from the consequences of constantly having holes in the antichoronic development that we have is to drink pomegranate juice, because pomegranate juice has the esoteric on the astral level and on the mental level and on the unseen level. Pomegranate juice is an extension of a very high spiritual remedy that helps people, that helps spiritual structures to survive in this kind of environment. And buying some pure pomegranate juice that's made only from pomegranates, that has no additives in it at all, and drinking a little bit of it every couple of days is very helpful and very useful prophylactic thing. The second thing, Imperil. We talked about Imperil in earlier lessons and lectures. Imperil is everywhere in human life and in human culture. It's not in nature. If you go out of a place where there have never been any human beings, you won't find any Imperil. But it's everywhere. It's on everything you touch. It's all over. It is transmitted through ectoplasmic leavings on telephones, public telephones, all kinds of things. And in a healthy, spiritually growing, dynamic body, human being, it's not a problem. It will dissolve. It will not be able to penetrate the aura. It will be sort of just burn away in the aura of a person like this. But unfortunately, our lives fluctuate, and we go through ups and downs. And when we go through down enough, we start to get cracks, and then we can have problems with it. None of us are such great saints and such enlightened beings that we can be invulnerable at all times. So what I strongly recommend is that people purchase rose oil, not perfume, not a rose oil that's a perfume that's been made with perfume or anything else, but the pure rose essential oil, which has the esoteric property of dissolving impurity, and that one places it each morning when one arises on the crown, the ajna, throat, the heart, the solar plexus, on the pulses, right here where the blood comes close to the wrists here, and on the soles of the feet, and on the nape of the neck. And if one does that, it will have a tremendous help in keeping one more invulnerable from the sources of impuro, which are irritation. And because in your aura will be a special helping spirit, which is the spirit or essence of rose, and that will save you from becoming irritated, or from having irritation be able to precipitate itself into impuro in your aura, if you do that each morning. And as you become more developed, you are more vulnerable to irritation, and so you really need to develop this as a practice that you do. And that's for living in this culture. It wouldn't have been necessary 300 years ago. It wouldn't have been necessary 500 years ago, but it is something that is very beautiful, wonderful remedy we have today. Now, the trouble is, pure essential rose oil is expensive, but the place where I know to get it, the best, one of the purest that's made, is also one of the cheapest that's made, because it's made by a disciple of Hari Das, who's a wonderful being. And the brand name is Sumeru. And if you can find that, you can get a lot of very good rose oil at a very low price, and a bottle of it will last you for months. But I strongly recommend rose oil. I won't go, when I talk about the esoteric effects of other essential oils, which will be in another lecture, then I will talk about amber and other kinds of things. But these two things I mentioned as prophylactic. These are very important things when one is doing purity practices. The pomegranate juice and the rose oil is just pretty much an essential thing to do and to get into the habit of doing. You can also take a little rose oil and you can pour it into a hot, hot bath, just as the hot water is running in, and that will go circulate through your whole aura. Then you won't have to anoint yourself with it. It'll just be there. And there are other uses for other things like that too. Okay, breathing. When one breathes, much goes on through breath that we don't understand normally. But what one focuses one's consciousness on, if you focus your consciousness on something and breathe through both nostrils with your consciousness focused on it, the energy or the essence or the virtue of that thing will come in through the top of your aura, through the crown area of the aura, and it will circulate down through your whole body as you breathe in through your nostrils. And then, as you breathe out through your mouth, then it will fold in and it will come up again like this. And then if you end that breathing up through the mouth with a hum, you seal that into your aura. And you bring into your aura a sweetening or an empowering that lasts for, depends upon what you've brought in, what it does. But one of the most powerful things you can bring in is a way for achieving staying power in energy. For example, at the time of the exact rising sun, while the disk of the sun is still very close to the earth down low, and one can keep one, the reason that it has to be done then is because you have to open your eyes and look at the sun. If you do it when the sun's up in the sky and open your eyes and breathe in, you can be damaged to your eyes. But when it's nice and low like this, or when it's a sunset time, you look at the sun and you do this breathing. I do it usually 7 times. I do it in the morning when I have to do things and I'm starting to feel I'm really depleted, my energy is depleted. And you can bring into yourself prana, solar prana, very powerful prana, very powerful vital energy. And you can also inhale other things than just prana. That one of the things I mentioned is solar prana. But you can inhale also through certain kinds of essential oils, flowers and leaves, solar prana, through the aroma that you take from pine needles and you crush up, and you can breathe that in, and you can actually smell that. That can give you a powerful charge of prana. A beauty, something that is very beautiful, that you see, some very beautiful thing, you can breathe that, you can inhale that, and you can bring the energy of that into your own aura to help you and to lift you up. Music, something you hear can be breathed, something you see can be breathed. When you have a feeling of joy, when you start to get a feeling, and this goes on to joy practices, but joy, as I said before, is a joy and bliss are very elevated sensibilities and feelings that modern humans do not allow themselves to feel. The minute they start to feel it, they shut themselves down from it, and they don't allow themselves to feel it properly. And that is because of the psychological history of modern humanity. When you experience joy, you have to hold it and keep it and magnify it, and you can do that by breathing it. If you say you're out in nature somewhere and you see something and you start to feel joy welling up in you, then just breathe in through the nostrils with your eyes open or your eyes closed, depending on whatever it is that's giving you joy. And let tears even come to your eyes, and just breathe in through the nostrils and then out through the mouth and hum. And do that as long as you can sustain the feeling, because that joy is one of the most powerful initiatic forces there is for the soul. You can, through 1 minute of breathing joy, you can do more to stabilize your own psychic structure than a month of pain could do for you. And pain will stabilize it too. There's two ways to do this, folks. There's the fun way and the not so fun way. And joy is a very effective thing. That can happen with love. That can happen with love between people in sexual union. The joy that you find in a little child or a little animal or some living thing. And you have to allow yourself to feel that. Most of us don't allow ourselves to feel joy because it starts to approach.